So 6 weeks ago, we started through a study in the letter from James. As he starts off the letter, he lets us know who it's from. He says, James, a servant of God and the Lord Jesus Christ to the 12 tribes scattered among the nations, greetings. So he's writing to the church at large, the 12 tribes scattered among the nations. And this is why James is called a general epistle. Epistle means letter. So it's a general letter from James to just a general group of Christians. Just it applies, as we've seen in the last 6 weeks, it applies to us just as clearly as it did to them. It really bridges cultural barriers there tremendously, because the points of wisdom that James talks about just speak right into our lives. And so James is a general epistle. We have one more general epistle that we're going to be looking at, and this will kind of finish up this little study. We looked at a pastoral epistle, 1 Timothy. We looked at a prison epistle, Ephesians. We looked at Romans and Galatians, part of Romans, and in the book of Galatians. And then we've been in James for a little bit here. And then next week, we start into 1 Peter, which is also a general epistle. And next week, we've got a very special guest coming to speak for us, with us, to us. Tony Wolfe is coming, and that's in your bulletin also. There's a little blurb in there about him. We are going to be very blessed to have him. We're going to have him for a Sunday morning this year. Next year, we'd love to get him back for a Sunday morning and then a Sunday evening comedy show, so you can bring all your neighbors and friends and coworkers and whatnot. Should be a blast. But I want you to get to meet him first. And so he's coming here next Sunday. He's going to be sharing our message to open up 1 Peter, talking about our relationship with God. Great guy. This is what he does for a living. You can look him up online, go to his website, and read up a little bit on him if you'd like. He's very very strong in the Compassion International, very strong in Upward Sports, and he has agreed to come here just on a love offering, which is impressive. He does this for a living, and he's like, hey, I'll just come, and you know, he just puts his faith, you know, in our hands and in God's hands, but to use us. And so I want to give you guys a heads up a week early, that way when you come next week, you come prepared to bless him as he comes to bless us. And so I'd love to see him leave here with a great blessing that says, wow, that Miami Town Church of Christ, they're a group of people that are just very, you know, generous and very just full of blessings. So I want him to feel that, not just monetarily, everywhere else, but I definitely would love to see him blessed in that way. So I want to give you guys a heads up, because sometimes you get there the day of and you're like, oh, I wish I'd have known. So now, at least those of you who are here today, you know. But we are talking about James, finishing up James right now. Pardon me, I even have a cough drop. So in our study so far, we've talked about wisdom in trials. That was the first message in this series. And we defined a trial as anything that tests you, anything that puts you to the test. And we looked at how James gives us wisdom of how you can handle both external difficulties, that are difficulties from the outside pressing in, or internal struggles, which a lot of those deal with struggling with sin inside of you, and how we can use his advice on wisdom in both of those situations. We talked about wisdom in action the week after that, about how faith and deeds cannot be separated. They never should be separated. Faith and deeds come together, they're together, they're one. And that our faith should have action attached to it. Our faith should be able to be seen by the things that we do. And then we moved on from there. We talked about wisdom in choices, about how our choices that involve our interaction with each other, it also, that reflects and reveals our choices in our relationship with God, which reveals our choices into who we choose to follow, either God or Satan in his ways. And it's really that black and white. James is kind of, he's a king of kind of this black and white way of viewing things. And you really can't argue with the guy. He brings it down to a real crisp, this is black, this is white, here it is. And so he brings it down, and just at the end of that little section, just the very simple, hey, if you know the good you ought to do, do it. If you don't, that's sin for you. He's like, wow, that's kind of strong, but that's absolutely correct. So we ought to just go and do the good that we know we ought to do, and that would help to narrow down our field of choices. If you're just choosing, okay, I'm just going to do the good I know ought to do, that keeps it pretty simple. Then we talked about wisdom of your words and just how powerful this thing is, how amazingly powerful our mouth is, our tongue, the words that come out of our mouth. They have the ability to bring life or death. And we all have experienced both sides of the spectrum there. We know that the mouth can bring great encouragement and lift people up and build people up. And the mouth can also bring great discouragement and tear people apart and hurt deep down into the soul of a person. Words have that kind of power. And so we need to be very careful and use wisdom when it comes to the words that come out of our mouth. And we even looked at Peter, when he talked to Jesus, and Jesus described that he was going to have to go to the cross, and Peter said, "We won't let this happen to you. No way we'd let this happen." And of course, Jesus says, "Behind me, Satan. Get behind me, Satan." So even in that scenario, even when your words are sincere, they're not always the best thing. You still need to filter and say, okay, is this going to be a blessing? Is this going to be something good? Should I be sharing this? Because your words can derail someone from the path that God would have them go down. And none of us want to be accused or part of doing that, of doing Satan's work inadvertently, simply because we have a feeling and it's sincere, and we feel like since it's our feeling and it's sincere, we have every right to share it. Not always the case. So we need to be careful with our words and watch what we say. And then we talked about wisdom of how we view others. We talked about this last week and how James says that favoritism is a sin. Point blank, but as strong as you can put it, favoritism, it's wrong. It is a sin. And he says it's a sin because it's the opposite of loving your neighbor. You can't love your neighbor and show favoritism. The two can't work together. The only way you can truly love your neighbor, and that is anyone that is in need, is to do so impartially, to do so without favoritism. If there's favoritism in your life, if there's partiality in your life, you're not going to be able to fulfill what Jesus says is the second and greatest commandment, and second only to loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. So, you know, and God didn't show favoritism when he sent his son Jesus. We looked at a huge list of people that Jesus interacted with and showed no favoritism to any of those people. So if our Father doesn't show favoritism to us, if the man who we claim to follow, Jesus Christ, was a clear example that he didn't show favoritism, then we should fall in line. We should follow in their footsteps. We should not measure someone's value by the standards of the world. We should measure them by God's standards and follow the example that Jesus Christ gave to us. And that's wisdom of how to view others. And finally, to our last Sunday, wisdom in knowing who to turn to for more wisdom. We're going to look back up to the very first subject, the very beginning of the letter here of what James brings up. And so we'll go back and read this here just to kind of get a running start into this subject. Of prayer, of wisdom, and knowing who to turn to for more wisdom. James says, consider it pure joy. Those of you who are here for the first week, that should sound familiar. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Okay, so that's the whole conversation we had about going through trials, and that was kind of more the external trials that are on you. Later in the chapter, he dealt with some of the internal struggles, but the external trials, and you need to do this so that you can persevere, and then the perseverance would bring about a more complete you, a more mature you. And then he goes on to say this, and this is a verse that we did not talk about that Sunday. He says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. So we talked about wisdom in trials, and James opens this up, says, consider it pure joy, my brothers. Consider it pure joy, my sisters. And we talked about how can we get pure joy? How can we experience that? How can we enter into a difficult time? He's not saying that we should enjoy the pain or enjoy the suffering that comes with dealing with external difficulties. That's not what he's saying. He's not saying that we should enjoy the thought of rebellion against God, that we should enjoy the thought of sinning against God if we're dealing with an internal struggle with sin. That's not what we find pure joy in. What James is talking about is this just athletic mindset of, as soon as this comes at you, you've already won the victory in your head. You're already looking at the scenario and the situation saying, we got this. I'm going to see a victory in Christ in this. And that's James's understanding, that his attitude on this. Whenever these things come your way, look at this as another opportunity for Christ to be victorious in your life. Whether it's a victorious through a faith that stood strong in a tough time, or victorious because our faith was resolute in the face of temptation. This perseverance that comes through that, it'll produce maturity, and we will be made more and more complete as we experience victory after victory. But where does this wisdom come from that provides this hope of victory? And that's where we kind of come in and connect the puzzle piece in this morning. It's wisdom that we've asked God for. We can go to God and ask for wisdom. I want us to think about that. We're so used to talking to God. We're so used to going to him and, hey, God, help me out with this, or I need help with this, or I need this, or can you... We do that so often, and I don't know if we really sit back. I know I don't as often as I should, and I think it's pretty universal to realize we get to go to the creator of the universe, who made our bodies and made the whole world and the universe and just the, you know, the microcosm, micro and the macro, everything that we see. And not only that, he authored the moral code. He authored what's right and wrong, what we should be doing, and what's healthy for our soul or our spirit. And we get to go to him. We have an open door to ask him for his wisdom. And he's going to give it to us. I don't know if we really get how amazingly special that is, that we get that opportunity. I mean, that alone, we could just go on and sing a song now, because that's enough to take home right there to say, wow, that's powerful. We can go to God and we can ask for his wisdom. And in connection with what James is talking about in the midst of the struggles, we can go on and write this down, that the success of our perseverance through trials involves prayer. We can go to God and ask for his wisdom in our storm, in the midst of things just crashing all around us, or in the midst of inner turmoil inside of us. We can go to God and ask for his wisdom. Asking for wisdom will help us to navigate life's trials. Asking for wisdom will help us to navigate life's trials. We're told in this passage here, God will give generously. He will not hold back. It's amazing to reflect on that. Not only do we get a chance to go to God and ask for his wisdom, but we're told that he'll give generously. It's not just a little sprinkle. It's not just a little bit, a little, you know, teaspoon or a half or a quarter of a teaspoon of God's wisdom. We're told he's going to give generously. So if we're going through tough times and we ask God for wisdom to help navigate the stormy waters, God's going to give to us generously. We talked about last week how God does not show favoritism. This is another example of that, because not only does he give generously, he gives generously to all. Let's take a look at that verse again and kind of look at that and break it down just a touch. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously. Everyone say generously. To who? All. Oh, it's not even up there. You guys are just guessing. Good guess, though. Oh, we should be two more. Okay, let's get that one, and then I'll let you guys write that down. Some of you guys are writing it down while I'm speaking it. Asking for wisdom will help us to navigate life's trials. Oh, I guess everyone got that one. No one's writing. So, okay, then we can move to the next, so the scripture there. So if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God who gives, and everyone said generously, to all. To all, without finding fault. I think that's just so powerful to get that, because I think what keeps some of us sometimes from seeking God's wisdom is because sometimes we've gotten ourselves in our own mess, and it's those times when you're kind of like you're the naked Adam and Eve in the garden, and you're ashamed of who you are, what you've done, what you've said, or who you've hurt, or the consequences, or whatnot, whatever it is, there's a level of shame there. And it's those times when you really could use God's wisdom the most, and Satan's kind of won that battle in keeping you separate from him. And we have verses like this to remind us, he's going to give you wisdom without finding fault. That's amazing. Because we don't experience that in the world around us. I mean, even Christians, you know, We expect at least a level of judgment. You know, we expect a little bit of looking down their nose, you know, or a face wrinkling up a little bit, or eyebrows kind of creasing a little when you share something you're ashamed of. And here is God saying, I'll give generously without finding fault, no favoritism. I think it's amazing. And I think we need to hear that this morning. Because I think that keeps us from his wisdom in a lot of different situations and circumstances in the places where we really need it the most. And so we need to remember that God gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given. Oh well, I'll just be going by that clock then. You don't have to earn God's wisdom. You just have to be wise enough to ask for it. That's just kind of the first step. There's more to it. You can't just ask. You have to be willing to receive it. So let's go and write that down. When we ask for wisdom, we must be open to receiving wisdom. When we ask for wisdom, we must be open to receiving wisdom. Don't ask for something you're not prepared to take. That doesn't make sense, does it? To ask for something, because, you know, God, I need help in this. I need your advice here. I need some assistance. I need some guidance. I need some wisdom. And then when God gives you wisdom in the midst of your storm, then you humbly ask, is there anyone else up there I can talk to? Because we don't like the wisdom we get sometimes. And we're accustomed to doing that. That's kind of a natural thing for us when you're on the phone with customer support, right? You get some bozo and you can tell they don't know what they're talking about, or they're not compassionate to your plea. You know, you're calling them and you realize, I'm not going to get anywhere with this person. You give your whole spiel and you get to the end, they say, well, we're not going to be able to do anything for you. And you say, well, is there someone else I can talk to? How many, am I not the only one? We've all done that yet. Oh, come on, don't be ashamed. Come on, that's a whole room. There's nothing wrong. I'm not setting you up for anything negative. That's what you do, because this guy might not know what he's talking about, or they lack that, you know, connection to what you need to have taken care of here. Their customer support, so you're or whatever you're dealing with over the phone type deal. Is there someone else I can talk to get me to whatever place I need to get to help me out here? You know, and it's not just adults. I think it started with us when we were little bitty, because we'd go to dad and dad would say no, and so where would we go next? We'd go to mom. And we'd try to beat dad to mom secretly. You take the little tunnels through the house and get to mom and just kind of pop up there and hope that dad hadn't talked to her yet. And you propose, you know, and my kids do the same thing, you know, and your kids did the same thing. You know, and I'll hear them the next room over, and I'll hear them throwing the same spiel to Jess. And I'll say, Jess already said no. And so we've got a united front. She says, well, dad said no, it's no. And vice versa. They go to her first, and you know, it's something there. But it's something we do. It. It's in our nature. It's what we kind of are accustomed to, and not just in you know, something. Even with customer support, sometimes that can be a little selfish. You know, hey, I've got a late payment. Can you do something for me about this? You know, I haven't had a late payment in 7 years. Can you? You know, we'll call. We'll make that call, because the worst they can say is no. You know, in the mom and dad scenario, that's definitely, you know, there's some selfishness going on there. But then there are other times in our real life scenarios where, like, for instance, a medical situation. And you go to another doctor for a second opinion. You know, a lot of us have heard of that happening. You might have even done that before. You've got one doctor and they're saying this is what's going on, and you don't agree with them, or you don't think that they have what's your best interest in mind. And so you'll go to a second doctor. And that's not bad to do in that situation. You get a second opinion from a second doctor, and one that might have different, you know, technology, or have different skills or abilities, or a different mindset, or they might see something that the first doctor did not see. It's not a bad thing to do that. And in fact, we don't ever hear anyone criticize someone for doing that, do we? Now, if someone says, well, I went to my first doctor and I didn't like what they had to say or I didn't agree with them, so I went to a second doctor to get a second opinion on this, you know, so-and-so medical, you know, deal that I've got going on, you never hear someone reply, you idiot. Why are you wasting money going to a second doctor? I've never heard that. Because it's generally accepted that that's all right to do, that makes sense to do, that's logical, that you are going to benefit from doing that. And so I think it's easy for us to we don't see it, but I think when it's spelled out in front of you, you know, right here, it's easy to say, oh yeah, we function this way in so many other areas of our life, and yet that bleeds over when we ask God for advice and we say, I need your wisdom, I need your help, and God gives it, and we're not prepared to use it or take it or receive it, and we reject it. And we say, no, is there someone else I can talk to? I'd really like to get a second opinion on this advice because I don't agree with it. I don't think it's the best, and you just can't do that with God. We have to get some separation from how we operate here and how we operate with God. If God gives you wisdom, it's wisdom from God. It's going to be amazing. Whether you agree with it or not, whether you understand it or not, it's going to be great. But when you ask for wisdom and you reject it, that's called being double-minded. Let's write that down. Double-minded. Asking for God's wisdom, then rejecting it if we don't agree with it. So when we ask for wisdom, we must be open to receive it. In those other situations, it makes sense to question. You get a different person. Not all customer service representatives are created equally. You know, some will be able to help you out more than others. Sometimes it's great to get a second opinion on a medical issue. Some people have had great success, and if they wouldn't have sought out a second opinion, they wouldn't have had the same results that they got. They got good results. So we're positively enforcing that this is something that's good to do, but we can't let that carry over into our relationship with God. If you go to God for wisdom and he gives you wisdom, you have to be prepared to take it. You have to be prepared to receive that. You ask for wisdom. He gives it to you freely without showing favoritism. That's amazing. It's not like, you know, and it would be different a little bit if God showed favoritism. Then it'd be something, you know, you'd have some merit in rejecting. But it's not like God's going to give this person amazing wisdom, and then when it comes to you, he's just going to give you okay wisdom. It's not how he rolls. It's not how God operates. It's generously to all without finding fault. So if God's going to give great wisdom to this person over here, great wisdom to this person over here, why would he not give you great wisdom? It's there in the scripture, in James, right there. He will give it to you. And God's wisdom is solid. Think of what you're getting with God's wisdom. It's not lacking anything. Elsewhere in James, in chapter 3, verse 17, he says, but the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Don't be double-minded. If you ask for God's wisdom, be prepared to take it and put it into practice because it's the best choice. It's God's wisdom. You know, when we ask for God's wisdom, the premise is, and I think for us to kind of dig a little deeper and kind of understand this a little more, that when we ask for God's wisdom, what we're really asking for is we're asking for a little bit of his will on that subject. You know, God, I would like to know your will in this situation, in this subject. It's really what we're asking for in his wisdom. Let's go and write that down. Praying for God's wisdom is asking that God will give us a glimpse of his will on that situation. Now, we might not get the full picture of God's will. God gives generously wisdom, but that doesn't always mean that we get to see the rest of the puzzle, but we get a glimpse of his will on that situation, on that particular, whatever you're asking for wisdom on. If it's a trial, if it's how to use your words, or if it's choice in your life, or it's how you're viewing others, whatever it is, you're asking God, I would like to know your will on this particular part of my life, on this situation, on whatever I'm dealing with here. I'd like to know a little piece of your will. And what that does is this moves us into something that, that connects this faith and deeds sermon in that we listened to weeks ago and read about from James chapter 4, these faith and deeds. When we ask that, what we're praying for is when we're praying for wisdom, it's asking for active participation in the not my will, but your will be done attitude. It's active participation in that. It's saying, I want to know your will and I want to do your will. I want to be part of it. The whole faith without deeds conversation that we had a few weeks ago. In James chapter 4, he says, you desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. So our motives and our attitude must be centered on God and his will when we ask him to share a little bit of his will with us. We have to want it for the right reasons. We have to want it. Not only do you ask, not only are you willing to accept it, willing to receive it, able to receive it, but we also have to understand that what we're doing is we're asking God for a little bit of his will on the subject, and we are asking to be part of that. Praying for wisdom is like saying to God, I want to be part of what you're doing, and I want to be part of it in the way that you would have me be part of it. I want to be part of what you're doing, and I want to be part of it in the way that you would have me to be part of it. It's very active. I want to join in your will. Because otherwise, what good is it to know God's will? What is it to get wisdom from God if we're not going to join in with it? If we're not going to do something about it? If we're not going to connect faith and deeds? James continues in verse 6 of chapter 1, back to our original text for the morning. He says, but when you ask, you must believe and not doubt. Because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. Didn't get my D on that. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. There's that word double-minded. That's where that came from earlier. So he says you should ask and not doubt. So I think if we're talking about asking God for wisdom, we're talking about prayer, I think it'd be an important road to venture down for a moment. What is it? What are the ways that we doubt? So let's go and write this down. Ways we doubt when we ask God for wisdom. Ways we doubt. And these are all going to be familiar to you, but I think sometimes it's nice to bring them to the surface so we can kind of look at them and be a little more conscious. We doubt that he cares or that he will pay attention to our prayer. And it's kind of first level doubt that we go into when we're talking to God and we're asking for his wisdom on a certain subject. We doubt that he cares or that he's even going to pay attention. I was just talking recently with someone about the subject and just how I, in my life, as I've grown closer and closer to God, I've gotten to see and know how big he is and how amazing he is and how full of light he is. And it's exposed so much of how dark I am. And it's more an act of faith to trust that he loves me now than it was in 1991 when I was baptized into Christ. And it really is. I don't think that's just me. I think that's something we don't talk a whole lot about. But for me, I know it takes, you know, that's why songs like, you know, How He Loves Us is such a special song to me, because it kind of cuts through that. Seeing things like the passage we just read earlier that you know, God gives without finding fault. I need to hear that, because for me, it's really tough to accept that. It's really tough to say, okay, yeah, I really believe he cares. I really believe he's paying attention, because the closer I get to him, the further away I feel. Even though I know I'm closer, I know more about him and I know more about me, and it just feels, I just don't feel right there sometimes. And I think that's kind of a first level doubt when we're asking God. We doubt that he cares. We should never doubt that. He loves us. He cares for us. He pays attention. But I think that's all of us. I think we doubt that. I think the second level of doubt that we come into contact with, if we get past that first one, is that we doubt that he will respond or actually do anything about our prayer. Yeah, I know he loves me. I know he cares. I know he's listening. He's paying attention. But is he really going to do anything? Is he really going to act? Is he really going to respond? Am I really going to see anything from this? I think, you know, and I don't want to show of hands, but I think that would be the whole room feels that way when we pray. At least that's there a little bit. And James says, you can't doubt. You just can't. It's not going to be effective. You're talking to God. And he's awesome. He's gonna care. He's gonna hear, and he is going to do something. Now, and that goes back to being able, you know, being willing to receive what he shares with you, what he gives to you. I think sometimes that creates that doubt because we don't get what we want, and then we think, well, he didn't answer me. No, he did. You just didn't want to hear what he said. But I think that's a key doubt for a lot of us, is that we think, well, he's not going to do anything. He's not going to act. I think sometimes a different angle of that, you know, when I'm talking to God and I'm sharing prayers or requests, in the back of my head, I kind of have this, and it's kind of a weird shade of this doubt. And it's just, I kind of think, he's God. He's going to do what he wants to do anyway, regardless of what I say, regardless of what, you know. And that's a little bit of this type of doubt in there. And then I have to be reminded that Moses talked to God and saved the Israelites a couple different times. But, you know, that's a big deal, that Moses had that ability to talk to God and have a conversation. And that helps me to understand and to look at my prayer life and say, you know what, it does matter. He does care to hear what I have to say. He is going to do something. I can't let those doubts come in. I can't let those doubts interfere my prayer time. And then this doubt we've already talked about, but it needed to be listed. We doubt his wisdom by not using it once he has given it to us. When we get through that whole process and God gives us wisdom and then we don't use it, why don't you use it? It's because you doubt that it's going to do any good. You doubt that it's going to work. You doubt that it's the wisest wisdom that you can get on the subject. Otherwise, if you believed that it was the best wisdom, you would do it. James says such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. Unstable life. That's trusting in anything other than God. Some Captain Obvious statements this morning, but and sometimes you just got to bring them to the surface. I love James's approach on this. It's very simple. You know, if you can't trust God, if you can't apply his wisdom that he gives you, God, who gives you wisdom generously without finding fault to anyone who's going to ask for it, if he's going to give you wisdom and you're not going to use it, you're not going to put it to use, you're going to reject it. If you're not going to take advice from God, then where are you going to get advice from? All right, you're going to get advice from these other sources, which those other sources, anything other than God, any other source has proven to be unstable. And it will prove it sooner or later. If it's stable at one point or another, it's going to fall through somewhere along the line. There's no other source that's going to give you the stability that comes from God. So if you're not going to put your faith or your trust in God, then you're going to be putting your trust in some of these other sources. And these other sources aren't stable. And so logically, any of us who have half a brain, if you put your faith in something that's unstable, you're not really going to put all your faith into that. When you step on a rickety bridge, you're not going to just whoop, you know. You kind of step lightly. Is it going to hold me? Is it going to be all right? And at every step, you're kind of questioning it. I hope I'm all right. And that's what we do. So really what we have is if we're not living a life where we're putting our faith and trust fully in God and we're trusting his wisdom, is what we have is a life where we're pseudo trusting unstable sources. How's that going to bring any stability to your life? How are you going to be any kind of a stable person? You're not. And that's why James says such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. You know, it's no wonder that we cringe when James says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, when you face trials of all kinds. When we come across that, because we're so accustomed to standing on shaky ground. We're so accustomed to having a life that's unstable because we put our faith in so many unstable things. You know, what about those times? What about those times when we are faced with a trial and our faith is fully rooted in God? And we ask him for wisdom when we are completely open, completely obedient to the wisdom that he gives us. Don't we come out on top every time we do that? If you don't do that, if you haven't done that, wouldn't that make sense that you'd come out on top? No matter what the outcome is, no matter what happens, but just that scenario, you're going to be in the best place that you can be. You're going to be making the best choices you can make. You're going to be using the best words that you can make. You're going to be viewing people the best that you can view them. All these different wisdoms that we've been talking about in the book of James, they're going to be there. If you're wholeheartedly, deeply rooted, connected to God, and you're talking with him and receiving from him and putting that into practice. You know, Elijah is a story, a character, a personality in the stories, and a few stories in the Old Testament. We talked earlier in James about how he used them, and Kurt's not here today. He had a headache this morning, but if you remember, those of you guys who were here when Kurt did a great job playing Abraham, and Rahab, those are two of the Old Testament personalities that James brings up in his book, and he talks about Job, and we didn't touch on that, but he also talks about Elijah. Now, Elijah is just an amazing story. A story of prayer, and it's connected into this talking with God, this, you know, getting wisdom from God and obeying that. You know, Elijah, he walks in to King Ahab and Jezebel, that, you know, evil queen. They're all mixed up in Baal and this worship that's not God. It's idol worship. And he says it's not going to rain because all this mess that's going on. And he walks out. And what's amazing, we're going to read this in just a minute, but James has this insight that he prayed that it would not rain. That's not in the Old Testament. That's not in, you know, any of the versions, the Greek Old Testament or the Hebrew Old Testament. It's not there. But we know that God told Elijah it wasn't going to rain because that's how he went with that kind of power. So there was conversation going on between Elijah and God. So, but James says he prayed that this would happen. This was his example. And it's not too out there to believe that, because we see some of the examples of prayer in, and I encourage you guys, 1 Kings chapter 17, and just start reading. It's an adventure. It's a great story, the story of Elijah. And you know, we have other pieces of that story where there were great prayers. The widow that he went to stay with, her son dies, and Elijah prays and brings him back to life. And that's like Jesus-level faith. That's amazing. That's the prayer of you know, Elijah. That's the power of his prayers. And when he went up to have the showdown on Mount Carmel, I always have to be careful. It always wants to come out Carmel. I don't know what my brain is thinking. thinking about lunch here in just a little bit. But up on Mount Carmel, and he's up there with the prophets of Baal, and there's 450 of them, and just one, it's just Elijah. And so they do this old showdown. I know you guys are, well, a lot of you guys are probably familiar with it. I don't have time to really tell the whole story, but he tells them, you guys get your altar together, and you pray to your God, and I'll get my altar together, and I'll pray to my God. And then whichever God lights the fire, whichever God brings the fire to the fight, that's the one that's the God, that's the true God. And so he let them go first, and they're, you know, screaming and cutting themselves and doing all sorts of just trying to get Baal's attention, and nothing's happening. And so after a while, Elijah gives them plenty of time, and then he says, okay, my turn. He sets up, rebuilds God's altar, puts 12 stones around the altar representing the 12 tribes of Israel, and he digs a trench around, and he has 4 jars filled with water and poured over top of the sacrifice and the wood and everything, and does it again, does it a third time, and it just drenches the whole thing, and it's so soaking wet. And Elijah prays, and God sends fire and lights and just burns the whole thing up. It's just amazing. And that's Elijah. That's the power of his prayer life. That's the power of his connection with God. Let's see what James says about Elijah. He says Elijah was a human being, even as we are. Even as we are. He prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain on the land for 3.5 years. Again he prayed, and the heavens gave rain, and the earth produced its crops. Elijah's a story about it. Just a crazy, powerful guy. And once again, James brings this Old Testament personality, someone that was exalted and looked highly upon, like Abraham and like Elijah, and says, you know what? He was a guy. He was a human being. Let's write this down. Elijah was a human being just like me. See, I think the difference is all the things that we've been studying this morning. Elijah knew to go to God and talk to him and seek wisdom. Ask him for things and share with him. We know that he was in conversation with God. We know that his prayers were answered and his prayers were listened to. We know that Elijah had no problem doing what God had asked him to do. He was obedient. When he would ask God for wisdom, God gave him wisdom. Boom, he went off and did it. We see that in the story. It was consistent with his life, and we see that he did that. Elijah didn't doubt. He didn't waver. He believed that God cared for him. He believed that God listened to his prayers. He believed that God was going to do something about them. And then when God gave it to him, he did something about it. His faith and deeds were connected. That's what we see in Elijah. And James reminds us, in the midst of all this, this conversation about wisdom in the very beginning of the book of James, and this little conversation about prayer at the very end of James, Elijah is just a guy, just like you and me. The only difference was he knew who to turn to for real wisdom, and he did something with it when he got it. And think about these subjects that we've been talking about. Think about the trials, difficult things that maybe you're experiencing from the outside right now, or maybe it's a struggle with sin inside that's going on. And think about praying and following the example of someone like Elijah. Just immediately that image, just for a half a second, when you suspend your disbelief and you say, you know what, that would be awesome. My difficulty I'd be able to weather it. That struggle with sin, it just kind of feels like sin doesn't have any power when you think, if I had the faith of Elijah, if I prayed that way, if I lived that way. But you can. That's what James is saying. It's just a guy like you and I. We think about some of the our faith and our deeds. Sometimes that's tough to put that together and say, you know, I need to do the things that God wants me to do. I need to, and when I ask God for something, I need to have the faith and the obedience. You look at someone like Elijah as an example and say, man, he really did that. And look at the amazing things that happened. Did he have emotional struggles in the midst of it? Absolutely. Was he a mess at times? Absolutely. But you see the results of his life and what happened and the imprint that he made for the kingdom of God for years and years and years and years. And we look at someone like that and we say, you know what? All he did was he married his faith and his deeds. God said, do it, and he did it. You can do that. I can do that. He was just a man, just like you and I. You know, our choices. We have all these different things in front of us. James brings it down. He says, if you know the good you ought to do, then do it. Isn't that kind of what Elijah did? He knew the good he ought to do, and he did it. He did what was right. He did what was noble. He did what was pure. He did what was, you know, he did the right thing. And you see it throughout, and I encourage you to go and read that. 1 Kings 17. And you see that. His choices were made very simple because his faith was in God, because he got his wisdom from God, and when God gave him wisdom, he just did it. Man, that makes it so much easier because we're just people like Elijah. And if God's going to give you wisdom, take it and just do it. And let the burden of the choice go away. Your choice was to allow God to give you wisdom. After that, you shouldn't have any more choices on that subject if you want things to turn out the best they can turn out. You choose to go to God for wisdom, and then after that, you just let it go and you take whatever he gives you and you put it into practice. And you take the next step. And if he gives it to you in phases, you just keep following him. Look at Elijah's life. I encourage you to go back and read that and look at the choices he made. He didn't have the full puzzle in front of him. He went here and he did this, and then he went here and he did this, and then he went here and he did this, he went here and did this. And we have no reason to believe that he knew all of this was going to take place the way it was. He just followed God step by step by step. And we can do that. Can't we? Yes? Every little choice. And sometimes we think choices are too small to bring to God. Take them all to God. Why do we risk even the little choices with our own wisdom when we have the wisdom of God that we can turn to? Oh, I don't want to bother him. Come on, he's God. He watches the birds eat. He makes sure that the flowers of the field are clothed. I think he cares about what you're going to name your pet, or what you're going to, you know, how you're going to treat your body that day, or how you're going to treat a coworker, or what you're going to say to somebody. Or I think he cares about that because he cares about you intimately. So don't be afraid. Don't shy away from taking every choice to God. What about our words? What if we followed this Elijah example of wisdom and putting it into practice with the words of our mouth? In the midst of all the stuff that's going on here, it's eerie to bring in an example like this. But you know, none of us would sit here and just pull out a gun and just start just, you know, auto, you know, everywhere. That none of us would do that. We see people on the news that do that, and we think that's a twisted individual. That's disgusting. That's wrong behavior. That's not right. None of us would do that. None of us would grab a sharp object and just, you know, come in here with a katana or two of them and just double blade and just start swinging around. None of us would do that. Why? Because it would hurt people. Because it would damage people. But man, we come in and we use our mouth and we use our words with no restriction, no boundaries, nothing. And those words can cut deeper than a sword or a gun bullet can pierce. Those things can hurt the soul. Wouldn't it be wise of us to use an Elijah wisdom to pray to God and ask him to be in control of our words? They can bring life and death. I think we want our words to bring life, and the only way to do that is to seek God's wisdom and say, God, be in charge of this. Be in charge of my tongue. Give me wisdom with the things I say. We just got to think about these things. Last week, talking about viewing other people, favoritism, it's a sin. I wonder how many of us this past week asked God, God, I need your help with my favoritism. I need your help with this form of bigotry I have in my life. I need your help with this partiality that I have towards a person or a group of people or a type of people. Or how many of us left last week and we tried to hack it for 7 days on our own, thinking, man, I got to do that. I got to do that. I got to get rid of favoritism. It's a sin. How many of us went to God and said, God, I need your help. Give me wisdom. And that's why today is the last message of the series, to connect all that in. James is just a book full of wisdom. And this final little piece, we should have the wisdom enough to know who we can turn to for more wisdom.